Today's program was brought to you by Fiji Water and Patina Events at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, an idyllic location for weddings, corporate events, and parties of any style. Visit us at patinaevents.com.
Ever heard of a popcorn-driven robot? This week on Meat and Three, we're bringing you stories about the intersection of food and tech.
We're interested in building swarms of many cheap, small robots and powering them and driving them forward with as little effort and as little energy as possible.
We cover tech by land.
Imagine if you could cut fresh microgreens onto your salad and eat it while the greens are still fresh and nutritious and delicious and alive. That dream is real.
We cover tech by sea.
We're building software-based business services to help shellfish growers manage and grow their business.
And we cover tech in the social media stratosphere.
So it's not really necessarily an indictment on food media or media consumption at all. It's how the robots decided that they were going to weight human interaction.
Tune in and get techie this week on Meat and Three, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Moxie Rosenblum. My dad, Harry Rosenblum, hosts Feast Your Ears on Heritage Radio Network. Right now, HRN is having a summer membership drive. Becoming a member is so easy, and you'll help support shows like my dad's. You can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Let's keep food radio on the airwaves this summer.
Hello, this is your host, Dana Cowan, and you're listening to Speaking Broadly on Heritage Radio Network. Each week, I interview an extraordinary person who works in the food industry to learn about their challenges, their successes, and how they got to the remarkable place that they are today. My guest on this show is a cookbook author and Instagram star who embodies the sunny California lifestyle. If you want to know how to win at social media, or the easy dinner party game, or even the best way to find a husband, you are totally going to want to listen in. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe on Speaking Broadly on iTunes, Stitcher, or Heritage Radio Network. So welcome, Gabby. And I'm Gabby Dalkin, who the first time I met her, I was like, Gabby! And she very sweetly was like, Gabby.
It's just like the last 30 years of my life have been like that. I correct everybody.
Did you ever think, Mom, like, what were you doing? Or did you name yourself Gabby and she sort of called you Gabrielle?
No, I was always Gabriella, but as a kid, I couldn't pronounce it, so I'd call myself Bobby. And so I think the switch from Bobby to Gabby is really natural. Like, it's just, you just flip the beginning, even though it's spelled differently. I don't know. It's just whatever. I'm German. It's weird.
Well, I will never forget. So there's that.
Thank
and,
you.
And I mean, in my life, I actually have a very funny Dana Dina thing because my name is Dana, but in the food world, there is someone named Dana Bowen, and so but we look the same if it's typed, or written, and so people will come up to me and say, "I'm really excited about the Dynamite Shop, which is something that Dana Bowen is opening." And I'm like, "I think you've got the wrong D-A-N-A." So anyway, really, really happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And you're in the middle of a cookbook tour, which you still have so much energy, which I admire, having done one myself. And your cookbook is called What's Gabby Cooking? Everyday California Food. And I think that, like, when I think about you and I think about your food, it's more of a mental image than anything else that comes up.
For
because
sure.
It's, like, bright and happy and cheerful, and of course it's lots of avocados and lazy girl enchiladas and really decadent desserts and fun holiday foods. Like, you are the lazy girl's best friend, but I think more than that, you are the human embodiment of sunshine.
Thank you.
And so I want to talk about something abstract before we get to something specific, which is, I'm always mystified by people who are sunshine encapsulated, whether it's in books or food recipes.
Fair enough.
Is it something in the sunlight in Arizona where you grew up? Is it something in having, you know, an artistic mother? Like, have you always been so sunny?
I have. And I had this conversation with my parents recently because I was on a trip to Ethiopia. And the guy that was taking me was like, "What? I have four daughters. Like, why are you so happy and like bright and have a positive outlook?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I should ask my mom." So I called her when I got home. And she was like, "It's just, we just, you know, kind of forced you to be that way. Like, if something was wrong, you had to go fix it and like pick yourself up and go talk to your friend who you just got in a fight with at school because you're 7 years old and that's what happens." And I think, yes, like the sunshine definitely has an effect on it. Living in Arizona for the first 18 years and then California, I thrive when it's sunny and I can be outside. I don't have a car, so I walk everywhere.
Okay. I was stunned. We're going to get to that because not having a car is very important to me.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to that.
So I just feel like all of that kind of helps me. I'm outside a lot. Like, I like to smile and I like to say hi. It's my favorite to say hi to people on the side of the street. And they're like, "What's going on? Why are you speaking to me?" And I just think it's hysterical. And I don't take myself too seriously, which helps.
I'm interested in the smile and the hello. Mm-hmm. My husband is a helloer. Mm-hmm. And he says hello to everybody. I mean, every busboy that walks by every table in every restaurant,
and
the server, and the chef,
yeah,
and the other guests. He's like, "Hello," but every time,
yeah.
And I'm like, that's a little distracting. They don't actually expect it,
right? Nobody does these days.
No, but do you feel like it changes? Like, it allows you to continue to exude a positive energy, and sometimes you get it back and sometimes you don't?
Yeah, and I think most of the times you don't, but then like a couple seconds later, they like turn around and they just are very confused by what happens because we live so much on our phones and on our computers, like no one's talking to each other anymore, and I just think it's good to like splash a little sunshine onto people's days.
It reminds me of Ellen Bennett and her hug theory. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all love Ellen.
We do. But Ellen's a hugger.
Yep.
And it doesn't, you know, she just comes barreling at you and she will say, "I'm a hugger." At least with the smiling.
That was a great impression of her.
With the smile, it's a little bit less. You don't have to ask to smile.
Yeah.
You can just smile away.
And I just think it's really nice to, you know, people have really tough lives and there's things going on. And if you have 1 second of sunshine from someone, that's pretty nice. Like, I'm happy I can do that for someone.
When you were developing the brand, you talk about how it took you a little bit of time to find your voice.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd love to go back to that. You started your blog in 2009, mm-hmm. and I'm amused by the stated purpose, which I don't know if it's actually true or not, but to make people jealous about, like,
yeah.
what you were cooking and what they weren't eating.
For sure. Like, well, I was in culinary school, and I was the pickiest eater growing up. No exaggeration. I ate buttered noodles until I was probably 19 years old. I didn't try a steak until I was in my senior year of high school. And so...
Why did you decide to stop being a picky eater?
I went to culinary school.
But why did you go to culinary school if you're such a picky eater?
Because I graduated... I was pre-med in college for the first 3 years, then switched over to business because I got to OCHEM, and I was like... I called my dad, who's a doctor. I'm like, "This isn't going to work. I'm not following in your footsteps."
Organic chemistry, I'm guessing.
Nope, hard pass.
Yeah.
So after college, I graduated with a business degree, and I got a job in LA, and the company folded 6 months in. This was in 2008. And I was like, "I don't want another job yet. I don't know what I want to do. I just want to go learn how to cook." For my husband, like, I didn't know. I wanted to be able to entertain. I do like feeding people and I like bringing people together over a table, but I had no intention of remaining in the food world. And so I started the blog and culinary school, and I got a job as a private chef all within probably 10 days of each other.
Okay. How did you get a job as a private chef?
Fake it till you make it.
Wow.
They're like, "We love fish." And I'm like, "That's great. Me too." I had never cooked fish in my life. I had just tried it in school. So,
Were they very forgiving? Like, were you making mistakes along the way?
For sure. The first time I made miso black cod, it was the ugliest, like most limp piece of fish I've ever seen in my entire life. I can't believe they didn't fire me. But I think being a private chef is also very much about your personality in someone's kitchen and if you fit into their family. And they were German and we had very similar upbringings and their kids loved me. So it worked out. They excused my ugly miso black cod.
Because I think you went thinking you'd be the nanny and you ended up being
right.
the
Right, chef. When I interviewed, I was interviewing for the nanny position, and I told them, here's my culinary school schedule. They're like, swap that. I was like, can I charge more? And I was like, done.
I can. Oh, that business school education really came in
really
handy.
Really came in handy.
I can charge you more. But you went on to work for Starz, right?
Yeah. Because
you worked for Jessica Simpson.
Yes, I was her chef for a couple years, and then this other family I started with in Malibu, and then like a few, I cooked for Carmelo Anthony and some other random people here and there.
I'm sure you're under a really strict NDA, but is there anything that doesn't fall under the NDA about like cooking for these stars?
Well, I think I did sign NDAs for all of them, but I have never cooked for a jerk. Like, Jessica's quite possibly the nicest human on the planet. Carmelo, I love people who like to eat, and
yes,
he just like shoveled it down, and I'm like, we're basically new best friends now. We'll probably never see each other again, but like this one moment was amazing.
What is that like cooking for someone, because it is so intimate. You're in their kitchen. You're really in their house. You're in their life. You're supposed to be invisible, I imagine.
Yeah.
You feed them food, but do you feel like, I want to be your best friend. Can we be best friends later?
Yeah. Well, so it's different. So I cooked for a head of a TV studio and his wife for a little bit of time. And that was very like, you're invisible. You're not part of this family. I cooked for them for 3 weeks and I quit because it was so awful. I don't think that's what food is about. But with Jess and this family in Malibu, I was I was very much part of their families, and we would like sit down and have lunch together and talk and gossip. And when I was getting married, I went on my bachelorette party, and Jess sent me to Vegas with like all these clothes and shoes, and she just wanted me to have the best time. Like, it was more, she has a lot of people around her that are very good friends of hers from like youth. And so I was lucky enough to fit right into that. But my Malibu clients were very similar in that regard. So I was very much a part of their family. We would vacation together, you know.
Together, like not just you were along,
but
it was your vacation
skiing. Yeah, the people in Malibu have this like fat chateau up in Mammoth, and we would just go up and go skiing. I mean, I would say I'm cooking dinner because I want to cook in this incredible like French kitchen, but I wasn't working.
Was there anything about working for these awesome people that helped you define the style that you have today? Like the way that Carmelo, my good friend Carmelo, and your good friend Jess, like the way that they eat, did it help define California style to you? Or did it help you sort of test like what do real people want to eat every night?
Yeah. So Jess eats very similar to me in the fact that we both grew up kind of like, she was in Texas, I was in Arizona. We like Tex-Mex style food, which has like a lot of California components. But the most influential person on the way I cook now is Simone, my boss that was at the Malibu place. She is like the chicest but most casual Malibu mom, and would have 30, 40 people over every Sunday night for family dinner. They weren't family, but we called it family dinner. And I would just cook everything. I'd go to the farmer's market. I'd go pick up some meat. I'd do tri-tip, all the salads and sides. And it was just so casual. And even me, who was cooking for 40 people, never felt stressed. And so I tried to take that and infuse that into my brand and my book so people can do the same thing.
I am not a relaxed cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really unhappy to say I'm not a relaxed hostess.
Okay.
I've gotten so, so, so much better over time. Mm-hmm. Part of the origin of my not relaxedness is that I make mistakes all the time, which is the basis of my book, you know, Mastering My Mistakes in the Kitchen. But part of it is I want it all to be perfect. And coming from that food and wine background, the expectations people have are very high.
Sure.
And, you know, there was one person who once said, I thought the food would be better here, which is, yeah, it was so annoying.
Appalling.
Sort of appalling. She said that like on a public panel years later. And I was like, oh my God, I'm never cooking for you ever again. But I've now figured it out because I actually serve everything room temperature. I will never serve a piping hot meal, like unless it's a stew.
Yeah.
But what are your keys to not stressing? Because you must have that way down.
Yeah, I do. Well, because for Jessica, I would go over and shop for 4 or 5 people, and then 37 people would show up for dinner. So you have to be able to switch on a dime. So I always have pantry things stocked. Like, you can always make a pasta with different things if I have like a surprise guest. But I do like the room temperature rule. I like doing one main course, like doing tri-tip or whole roasted salmon or something like that, and then doing tons of side dishes because those can all be made hours ahead of time and no one will know. And then I think it's really about plating, like making things beautiful, and people just get so excited because they eat with their eyes first and you call it a day and lots of wine.
Okay, let's go down the plating road because I love plating.
Okay.
And a friend of mine had 25 people over for dinner last night. She was a relaxed hostess because she was like, she texted me at about 3:30. Hey, do you think you could come over early to do some staging and plating? I was like,
that's what friends are for.
That's right. And she's my best friend. And I'm like, actually, I was like honored, thrilled, delighted to go do it. And I sorted through all her platters. And she had a variety of colors, variety of sizes, variety of shapes. But I only picked blue and white.
Yeah.
Which is like, I know you're quite, we'll get to blue and white in a minute. But, you know, that was the key to my plating. I only did things in blue and white.
Yeah.
Killed everything else. I used white bowls. And she was like, but they're not my fancy white bowls. I'm like, but they match the blue and white theme.
Right.
She's like, but can't I use this thing with a gold rim and like these cute bees on it and it's hand thrown and you know the potter? And I'm like, no.
It's not on brand.
It's not on brand. And she said, are you sure? And I'm like, I'm totally sure. Like,
if you're gonna, I know what I'm doing.
If you're going to leave this in my hands, actually, like, no, you're not using the bee. You're not using the bee gilt thing with all the blue and white I've selected. But what are your... So, and then I piled it. I was like, I am channeling Otto Lange. I am going to be an Otto Lange display. Mm-hmm. Otto Lange being this...
Incredible,
right? Guy in London who has many cookbooks, and you walk in, and that eating with your eyes thing, like piled high with food. So I made these pyramids of the roasted vegetables because I could have used a larger tray and it was flat, but I'm like, pyramid style. What's your style? Like,
I'm into piles. And Matt and Adam are my two best friends. They're married. Matt is a food photographer, Matt Armendariz. Adam is a food stylist, Adam Pearson. And when I do a recipe for a cheese board or a snack or all these different things, my instructions are just piles. Like P-I-L-E-S, period. And they're like, oh my God, we're going to kill you. We can't pile any more things. Like, stop. Give us something new to do. But I think it's really approachable for people to do. Like, you don't have to tweeze anything or arrange anything so artistically. You just have to throw things out there. And I also like doing things a little on smaller bowls and making it feel really abundant, because then no one's worried about taking the last scoop or, you know, is there going to be enough? I just want everyone to be really comfortable.
And what about the – and then we're going to have to get off this topic. But the mix and match. So I was counseling my, good friend Cheryl. I'm like, well – you need to take care of vegans, and you need to have different colors, and you need to have enough variety, and you don't have to have a grain, but you need some grain to be filling. And she ended up with too much food. but how do you feel about the number of things that you need to serve for like a dinner?
I think it's dependent on how many people are coming over and if they all are, if some are vegan or gluten-free or dairy-free or whatever. I feel like that's so prevalent in my life. I have a lot of people that have different allergies. So, you know, if six people are coming over, I'll make 8 to 9 things. And I'm, as a private chef, my greatest fear is running out of food. So I would always rather have more, and I love a leftover. So if it's leftover, fine. Like, I think it's better. But again, like doing things that you can prep ahead of time so you're not stressed out up until the minute everybody walks in the door.
And I suppose having a really great set of plates, you know, that are just ready, and having those ready the day before. Like, we were going through the cabinets. I'm like, where's a flat platter?
Yeah.
Where's a kind of round platter? Where's a tall platter? Where's the blue platter? Do you have any? And, you know, pulling those things out in advance.
Yeah, for sure. I've had my mom's a ceramicist. I've had her start making me plates, and I have them in a specific cabinet in my house. So that way I know everything's right there. There's no, like, I've got the plates, I've got the serving platters, I've got all this stuff ready to roll.
Let's talk about, you know, the source of creativity. Do you feel like it, you know, it trickles down in the family? Because, you were saying that your family is a lot of doctors.
Yes.
So maybe that's precision.
Well, yes. My mom is an artist, which I think is, and she's also a gardener. Neither one of those came to me. I have a black thumb. I will kill everything. And I can't, like, sit on a wheel and make pottery to save my life. But I am creative in the kitchen. My dad, on the other hand, just, no one in my family they all eat to live. No one lives to eat. So everyone's like, where did you come from? Like, for sure an alien. Like, 100%. So it's weird. Like, there are different, I don't know if it came from, I don't know if it trickled down for me.
Yeah. An alien that, but well, they're so lucky to have, you know, the alien that you turned.
Oh yeah. At Thanksgiving, to. They're all pumped because they just get to sit on the couch. I'm like, can someone peel some apples for Apple Crisp, please? I need a little help.
One of the things that I love about your style is its simplicity. And when you, every picture I've seen of you, you're in white and blue, which is why it goes back to the white and blue.
Especially the last 6 months, I planned it like that.
Like, what's the deal?
Okay, well, Matt, my best friend, when we were talking, because if I had my way in life, I would just wear yoga clothes all the time. Like,
is it true that you have 40 yoga, pair of yoga pants?
Oh, I just got 3 more last weekend in Vancouver. My husband's about to disown me. I have a sick problem. But I just want...
It's, why is that?
I just love them.
Yeah?
They're so comfortable, and I feel like you can dress them up, and you can dress them down, you can work out in them, you can go for a...
But they're yoga pants.
Here's what it is, though. I don't have a car, so like I don't want to walk for 4 miles in jeans. Right. So anyways, Matt was like, you cannot wear yoga pants to your book events. Like, you have to put something else on. And I'm like, I'm traveling for essentially 3 months in a row. How on earth am I going to do that? And like, I don't have access to laundry machine. I refuse to pay hotels to do my laundry because I'm not paying $20 for my underwear to be washed. And so he's like, you have to pack in a color theme. And like, you have tons of jeans.
God,
and
love Matt.
White's like the best color. And so everything has to be blue and white. And like, denim and navy. And I was like, easy. And everything this season are those colors anyway. So I just went to Bloomingdale's and bought everything and called it a day.
since you're you know, a yoga pant expert.
Yeah.
Do you have a high low choice?
I wear I would say 95% of my Lululemons. I'm trying to get them to sponsor my life. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but that would be like my ultimate goal.
Do they know that?
No, they have no idea who I am.
Gabi, hello Lululemon, calling Lululemon.
Yeah, they don't care about me. I kind of just wear those. If I'm going real fancy, I'll get the Aloe yoga pants, but they're like $30 more than Lululemon, and sometimes I can't bring myself to do that.
I needed to know that. The not driving a car. So
yeah.
Is it because you don't drive? It's because you're economical? It's because you're lazy?
So I drive. I take my husband's car whenever I need it. I just don't like it, especially in LA. There, you can't park anywhere. You have to valet. And I think valet adds so much time onto a trip. Like, I don't want to wait 10 minutes for my car to come back to me when it's time to go. So, and also now that you can't be on your phone while you're driving, I feel like I'm losing precious time. So I would rather sit in the back of an Uber and go across town and work for half an hour, or walk or ride my bike or get some exercise, because I also eat enough food to sustain a 400-pound man. So I need to move my legs a lot in order to combat that.
And so you don't find it inconvenient because there's always the Uber choice. Your husband has a car. Like, it's not,
yeah,
it's not like you're being the vegan of cars.
And actually, when I first got rid of it, I did all the calculations because I work from home now. I don't private chef anymore. It's way cheaper for me not to have a car. Like, I'm not paying for gas, I'm not paying for insurance, I don't have my monthly car payments. And if I spend $200 or $300 in Uber, it's still cheaper than a car payment.
I once had an Uber driver explain that to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's very compelling.
Yeah.
I'm particularly attracted to knowing this about you because I loathe driving, and I learned to drive at 53. So I had a whole life of not driving, not because I wanted to work off like, you know, gigantic meals, but because I grew up in New York City,
right,
and we don't drive.
Right.
I mean, actually, lots of people do, but I never.
The East Coast in general doesn't really drive. The Northeast part of the country.
Just if you're in a city, like, why?
Yeah, like, I'm doing a book signing in Boston next week, and it's 30 minutes outside the city, and everyone's pissed. I'm like, I'm sorry, there was nowhere to do it in the city. I couldn't. But people just are not into cars sometimes, and I totally, I'm with them. I respect it.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the evolution of the Gabi brand and bringing your best friends to work for you, which sounds so magical, and how you find such talented people, including your incredibly talented husband. So we'll be right back after the break.
Patina Restaurant Group offers unparalleled service in New York's most iconic locations, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center, and Macy's Herald Square. From meetings and presentations in the glass-walled atrium, to galas in the renovated Palm House, and intimate wedding showers at Yellow Magnolia Cafe, your event will be perfectly imagined and customized at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. You can also enjoy a la carte brunch and lunch at the picturesque Yellow Magnolia Cafe, overlooking Lily Pool Terrace. Chef Rob Newton and chef de cuisine Morgan Jarrett offer warm, distinctive cuisine with a focus on local vegetables, grains, and sustainably sourced meats and fish.
Welcome back to Speaking Broadly. This is Dana Cowan, your host, and I'm very excited to have with me Gabby Dalkin. Gabby, I said it!
It's okay. It's okay.
I said at the beginning of the show that I would never, ever, ever, ever call her Gabby.
I'm the only Gabby in America. Everyone else is a Gabby. It's fine.
No, stop. But you didn't have to correct me because I did it myself. We have Gabby with us, and Gabby has an incredibly popular book that has been on the number, it's been number one on Amazon since it was published. That is the greatest thing. Congratulations.
Thank you. I check my Amazon rating every morning. I have a problem. I have a full problem.
Yeah, when I checked my Amazon rating, it just, you know, it suggested that maybe I should check once a month. But
that's, it's so great. And I think that the reason it resonates so much is that you have built such a fantastic, loyal following of people who know exactly who you are, why they're going to like you and the book.
Thank
and, you,
you
know, want to meet you and get, like, you know, little rays of sunshine cast upon them.
Thank you.
And, you know, get some insight, which is so great. But it wasn't always that way.
No.
And I want to, there's so many people who would love to start a blog or become known mm-hmm. or do a book or have a life in food. And I love your thinking that don't ever do it if you're just trying to make money.
No.
Because yeah. it's a long road. And I know a lot of people who are in this space who have said to me, like, how do you actually make money? Like, they're super successful.
Yeah.
And the money's actually very slow to come. So you have to do it for other reasons.
You have to be passionate about it, for sure. And I can't tell you, I think, not my bridal party, but I would say a handful of the girls I went to high school and college with have seen what I've done. It's like, we're going to start a lifestyle blog. And they quit within 3 weeks. Yeah. They're like, why am I not making hundreds of dollars in advertising a day and blah, blah, blah. And it's not feasible.
Well, we'll stick with, you know, not why they failed, because they probably weren't committed, right? You
right.
can't do anything for 3 weeks. You can't
right.
even, like, learn to cut hair for 3 weeks.
No.
Although you have quit things. Like, I was fascinated to see that you quit pastry school.
I did. I got a cavity. I was really pissed off about that.
And you're like, cavity, no more pastry school?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Pastry school, it was, I think, a 12-week, 16-week program. The first 8 weeks I really enjoyed because it was cookies and quick breads and all these things. I actually, the last 8 weeks, we got into all the fancy things. And I'm like, I'm never going to make this.
Yeah.
And I got a cavity. Peace. I
gotta
go.
So, so we had talked earlier about how you started. But what I want to talk about now is how you tested, tried, probably not thinking about it exactly that way, but tested and tried a different type of personality, and then how did you come to the one that is yours?
Yeah, so when I first started the blog, I was surrounded by, it was me and a lot of moms, and everybody had kids, and I didn't fit in. And so I very much wanted to be, you know, I wanted my blog to be successful. And so I was making recipes for families when I didn't have a family and I didn't really understand it. I wasn't writing very well. I didn't know how to proofread. I didn't know how to write a recipe. Like, it's ugly. If you go back and look back at the first couple recipes, they're not there anymore. Like, I've redone them.
So you can't look back. Yeah.
Yeah. But I should find some and post them, you know, whatever. It was bad. And I was really kind of just like flailing. I didn't know what I stood for and I just couldn't figure it out. And then probably 3 years into What's Gabby Cooking, I sat down with a friend and she was helping me come up with my brand because I really wanted to like take it to the next level. And I just word vomited to her for about 2 weeks straight. And we came up with this whole California girl shtick and it was so easy. She's like, you're the California girl. I'm like, well, duh, that can't be that easy. She's like, no, that's definitely who you are. And like, let's take it and run with it and turn it into something bigger. And we did, but...
What was her background? Like, was she just a smart friend?
Do you know Lori Buckle? She was at Better Homes and Gardens and Fine Cooking.
This brings us to something that I'm completely fascinated by. Yeah. How did you meet Lori?
Lori and I met through IACP.
Which is a culinary group. And you said that's like one of the few conferences you go to.
Yes.
But Lori is sort of my generation versus your generation, right? We're like 30 years apart, maybe. 20 years apart?
Yeah, not 30.
Not 30. That'd be hard. That wouldn't be impossible, but it's probably not true. But I love that it was Lori, someone who had a ton of experience, rather than like a peer who was in the startup mentality and lived that world. So why did you choose her?
So Lori was at Better Homes when we met at IACP, and she took me under her wing, and she's like, I think you should have a column. We want to work with you. And I started writing a quarterly column for BHG. And then I started working with advertisers with them. So like if there was someone that wanted to do recipe development and then shoot it in an advertorial campaign and magazine, I would do a lot of that. And I would model in it because I'm so beautiful.
And she's super cute, people. You can't say that on a podcast. So, we were like, oh my God, what does that mean?
And then Lori left. Like she left Magazine World and she moved back to LA. And she was starting a company, and it was very mutually beneficial. She needed this information that I had, and I wanted the information she had. And we really just like mind melded for a year on things. And she has this blossoming company that's just kicking ass. And she helped me like take What's Gabi Cooking to the next level. And it's through IACP that we met. And I think, and I say this to everyone, IACP is not my generation. Right. There are very few people there that are under the age of 40 probably. And it's such a shame that more younger people don't go because there's so much incredible connection happening at IACP and people that you just have no idea you need in your life or that you want. And it's just, it's two worlds meeting. And I think it's really important.
I want to talk about the cross generation though, because I think it's fascinating and it's missing.
Yeah.
Because there's such an obsession with youth and what's important about what people are doing now. Mm-hmm. And actually, I read this fascinating quote. It was from, I think, somebody in the ad world who said, you know, it's how important it is, and this is a bastardization, which makes it sound boring, but how important it is to stay current, like to understand what's going on. So
yeah,
I get that. But the other way, like it's important to talk to people who have a lot of expertise. Absolutely. So how was it that you were helping her? Like what was it that you had that she benefited from?
Yeah. So Lori was starting, she started a company called Cook It Media, and they represent bloggers and they work with brands and they're doing a lot of social media work and developing content on behalf of brands. And so she came from the magazine world and very much needed to understand the digital landscape and how quote unquote bloggers and influencers, even though it's my least favorite word, work, and how they work with management companies and how they work with brands and how much do you charge for stuff like this. So I was, I'm an open book to anyone. So I just told her everything I know, and she took it and like mutated it into whatever she wanted to do with Cook It. And it's been amazing to watch her grow that. And she has multiple employees now and they represent so many people and they're working with all these cool brands. So it was, you know, like that's where she was going.
And it seems like she listened to you. She listened really hard. Mm-hmm. She also employed you. So actually seeing what you could do made it possible for her to help you even more.
Yeah.
Because she could see where you would fit in the overall landscape.
Exactly. And I think Lori thinks, I think she thinks about things as, you know, coming from the magazine world, you worked at Food and Wine, she worked at BHG, like you think about things in this umbrella brand, like, is this going to work for our magazine? Is it not? And she's like, you need to think What's Gabi Cooking isn't the blog anymore. Like it is basically an online destination / magazine. Like you have to think about it more in this way. So she brought it, like, I had never done an editorial calendar or anything like that. Now I plan 4 to 6 months out. That's all that kind of stuff she brought from the magazine world into the What's Gabi Cooking world.
And the other way that you sort of professionalized or grew your brand was to bring your two best friends along.
Yeah.
Come on, dreamy or so terrible. So
no, it's the best.
I mean, I know it's great for you, but I also, you know, I think it can go both ways.
It can.
So how did you identify that they were the right ones and that you wouldn't kill each other and that you would be best friends later?
Yeah. So Matt and I met probably like 8 or 9 years ago at a blogging conference, and I just loved him. And then I went to a photo workshop with him, met his husband Adam, and basically just implanted myself into their relationship. I'm like, I'm going to be here for the rest of your lives. Get used to it. And that was probably like 8 or 9 years ago. And What's Gabby Cooking wasn't making any money back then. So I was doing everything on my own. As soon as What's Gabby Cooking was making, like I had money and I could afford to put some of it back into my business, I decided the best use for my money was in my photography. Because I think everyone eats with their eyes, like we talked about earlier, and you need a visual voice. And so Matt and Adam were the obvious choice. Like, I love them to death. We travel together. We hang out. We drink together. We eat together. We do everything together very well. And we all know how each other works. So I was like, hey, listen, can we start like small and do a couple things here and there? And eventually they took over all the photography and everything visual for What's Gabby Cooking. They shoot. They shot the book. They shot the blog. They shoot all my lifestyle stuff, any sort of ad campaign we're doing. And we really crafted what the California girl look was. And it's evolved over the years. But we have a very, like, we all know what is going to perform well and what I want to look like and, you know, all that. So
did you find reference points? Did you spend time with, you know, together saying, you know, these are the filters I want to use? Like, how far down the road did you, like, in what way did you define it before you started shooting it? And
we didn't, when we first started. It was kind of an evolution over the first year. We don't use any filters, really. Matt just shoots everything raw and then maybe boost the color a tiny bit, but otherwise there's no editing. And we just wanted to feel bright and sunny and colorful. And so that works for Matt when he's picking props and shooting it. It works for Adam when he's styling it. It works for me when I'm developing it. Like, if I'm developing something without color, I won't even finish developing it. It'll never make it to Matt and Adam's studio because I know none of us, we're all going to struggle with it once it's there. So I think we all have those things in our minds when we're creating these images now, and we get together once every 3 weeks and shoot all the content for the month. And yeah,
that's really efficient. And I think you seem obsessed with time, understandably.
I love a to-do list.
Well, because you have so much to get done. Mm-hmm. And that's a really efficient way to do it. If you can shoot so much in
Well, and they're so busy. Like, they're doing a huge campaign with Frito-Lay this week. And I'm like, What's Gabby Cooking is small peanuts compared to like Pepsi and Frito-Lay and the Olympics and Coca-Cola, whatever they're shooting for. I don't need Food Network. You know, I have to be really organized when I get there because I need to maximize all of our time because they've got bigger paying clients coming in tomorrow.
So do you, have there been times where, because you know them so well, you know, you hit snags that were hard to get through? Like, is there anything about working with people you know so well where there is a challenge?
Yeah. I know what what recipes will bother them. So I always try and preface it. I'm like, this week we're shooting a board. So if I do a big bruschetta bar cheese board that has like 60, not really, that's aggressive, but if it has like 20 components to it, that's a lot of things to put in a photo. And it's really hard to style that. And it's hard to capture it all in a photo that's compelling, especially after we've been doing it for 4 years.
Yes.
So I try and do them few and far between because I know Matt doesn't love them. And it's just not, it becomes like a tense atmosphere at times. And I don't like that. It's like if I'm there and two of us are kind of in it, it's like mom and dad's fighting. And I don't, it's not a, I don't like it at all. It makes me very nervous.
And so it sounds like the way you avoid it is just thinking through their lens. Like, it's not something that they want and I don't have to do it.
Right. Right, exactly. And if it is something I have to do, we'll shoot it first thing of the day so everyone powers through it and then we can, like, smooth sail from there. And I'll preface it, like, a couple days ahead, like, FYI, like, we're doing another bruschetta bar. Like, just think about it now before we get into the studio. So.
And do they ever get mad at you? I mean, do you...
They probably get annoyed with me behind closed doors, but never to my face. Like, we love each other very much. it's like family. Like, you get mad at your family. They're brothers and, you know, all that.
So talking about family, let's talk about your husband. You've told this story before, but I find it irresistible. you have an awesome husband, Thomas. I say awesome even though I haven't met him, just because
he'll come to New York with me next time.
Everything I've ever heard about him makes him sound just awesome.
everyone wants to know how to find like the perfect guy. I knew I had an idea of how I was going to find my perfect guy, mm-hmm. and I did. Mm-hmm. And the way I did it was I looked to the women who had perfect husbands, and I was like, you obviously have good taste in men, and I want you to find me a husband.
Great.
And that worked very well for me.
Yeah.
But you had a different strategy. What was your strategy?
Well, so my best friend, Emily, she was 18. She was a freshman in college. I was 17 when I graduated high school. And she came over, and she's like, I was playing tennis. I played tennis at St. Mary's. And she's like, we have to look at every athlete on the St. Mary's website.
St. Mary's being the college that you went to.
Yeah, St. Mary's College up in the Bay Area in California. We need to look at every athlete, basketball, football, baseball, rugby, blah, 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 and find out what teams have the cutest guys. Like, you got to know who to hang out with in the training room. And we went through everybody. And we finished on tennis because I'm like, there's no way I'm going to date someone on the tennis team. And we picked out Thomas. And he was like, I think he had like black hair with bleach blonde tips and was wearing like a sweatshirt in his photo and was like way too cool for school. And I'm like, he's definitely the one. I don't know what I was thinking.
Because, like, really, California girl and skater boy? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It was. Well, and I wasn't even a California girl at that point. I was an Arizona girl.
That's true.
So I was just like, whatever. But I thought he looked great. And so I got to college. I met him the first day of school at tennis practice, and he was too cool for everybody. He wouldn't give anyone on the tennis team a time of day. But then, you know, fast forward a couple weeks later, we'd always get matched up to play mixed doubles together and to train together if it rained, because we would move inside and do sprints. And I was just like, he's so cute. I really like him. Like, and we would always flirt. And then finally, he had a girlfriend at the time. Finally, they broke up and we started like kind of talking. I had never had a boyfriend, period, at this point in my life. So I was very nervous about being in a relationship, and I was so hesitant. And then finally we got together, and I knew because I was in Tahiti with two of my girlfriends at a tennis tournament, and I was like, guys, let's go get tattoos. And they're like, great idea. What are you going to get a tattoo of? I was like, I'm going to get a dolphin on my ankle. And they're like,
why?
That's so not you, Gabi. And I'm like, okay, like, I'll just call Thomas. I was a little drunk at this time. I called Thomas and I'm like, hey, I'm gonna get a tattoo on my ankle. He's like, your mother will kill you. I'm like, he's the one. That's it. Like, he knows how much I value my mom's opinion. Like, done, sign. Where can this be over?
I love the idea of, you know, finding your husband in a photograph, but, you know, finding someone athletic,
yeah,
which makes sense, someone who's team oriented,
for sure,
right, which is really helpful, going to the has the same values, goes to the same school.
Yeah, we're very different, but also he's the yin to my yang. Like, I'm like, ah, and he's like so cool, calm and collected, and really like thinks things through, and I'm just like crying and like trying to whatever it is, like I'm a little more reactive than he is.
And does that ever get either one of you into trouble? You want to shake him and go, be more emotional.
Yeah.
And he's like, be more calm.
Yeah. Well, so I take him. My family does surprise vacations every year. And so we've been doing it since I was 8 or 9. My mom and my sister and I have summer birthdays. My mom hated throwing birthday parties. I would always cry. I'm not a crier, but I would cry a lot at birthday parties. So they were like, screw this. We're only going to take you on surprise vacations for birthdays. And we'll give you clues and we'll pack for you. And anyways, it's evolved into these very complicated and elaborate trips over the last couple years.
That sounds amazing.
It's the best part of my life.
Was that the safari or Italy?
Italy was for my birthday, for my 30th birthday. Safari, it was because my mom grew up in South Africa and I've been like harassing her to take me. But like I'll give you some clues later. But I post them on my blog now and people email my dad and they're very involved. Anyways, Thomas never...
Wait, pause. So people email your dad?
Oh yeah. There's so like people, and there's like there, he gets like hundreds of these emails every time we post, but there are probably like 24 people that are hardcore. They're Bruce fans. And so he gets these crazy emails from them deciphering the clues, and some of them have done it.
Really?
But anyways, when Thomas finds out, he's like, cool, we're going to the Bahamas. And I'm like, we're going to the Bahamas. Like, give me some emotion, babe. And he's just, it's not him.
So, yeah, finding that person who's going to be the yin to your yang is such a great, a great way to like lead a complete life, mm-hmm. so that you're not like in constant battles. In becoming the success that you are with the book, with the blog, with the sort of the lifestyle brand that you've created. What do you think the most what do you think the best advice and the worst advice you've ever gotten have been?
Oh, the best advice I've ever gotten was don't care what anyone else thinks. Just go do what you got to do. And don't take no for an answer.
So what did you do? Like, what did you do that people were like, that's stupid?
Well, I can tell you. I know exactly. So I really wanted my own line of products. And that was it. I wanted my own line of products. And some people told me, you're not ready for products. Like, I think you should do it this way. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do it this way.
What would this way have been?
I don't want to produce it on my own and sell it on my own. I want to team up with a company that is a super reputable, incredible company that's going to partner with me on this. And I can help them and they can help me. And I called Williams Sonoma. And we came up, we launched my first three products last spring. Three salsas. We did three more products this spring, and then we're planning some stuff for next year. And it was the best decision I have ever made, and I'm so glad I didn't listen to anyone tell me it was the wrong way to do things, because they have been the most incredible partner I've ever had in my life, and I wouldn't change anything for the world. But I in my gut knew that what everyone else was telling me was wrong, and I just disregarded it. So that was do it. That's my favorite advice.
And the worst?
I mean, people tell me to get real. This is so silly, but everyone's like, you should get really dressed up for all your TV and public appearances. Like, you should be wearing heels and dresses and all these things. I'm like, that's so not me. I would never do that. So off brand.
Yeah, those people are.
Yeah. Like, I had a stylist once who put me in all these fancy clothes. I'm like, I've never been more uncomfortable in my life. Like, I totally respect people who buy all these beautiful shoes that are trendy, but they're not me. Like, I'm wearing Nikes.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, certainly yoga pant girl, like, I can't imagine.
Yeah, you can't put me in a 6-inch heel and expect me to cook on the Today Show. F no.
So bad. I had the pleasure of doing a Chico's ad. Mm-hmm. It was super fun. They wanted role models, you know, not real models. And the whole time I was in flats, but for what turned into the cover shoot for the catalog, they needed me in heels. And I was like, but I won't be able to walk. So they're like, oh, that's okay. So we walked to the set, you know, I was barefoot. They put the shoes on. The picture as it was published is me hanging on the person to the left, limping on the right. Because we were supposed to be like happy and laughing. I'm I really was more like happy and wincing because it was fun, really super fun to do. But I'm
cool.
I'm falling
off
these heels.
Could anyone else tell you were falling or just you?
I think the laughing, people couldn't interpret the my laughing is like, you can't believe how uncomfortable I am. And I really can't stand in these shoes. And if you don't take that picture right now, I'm going to fall over. That was the laugh. But I think it looked a little bit more like, oh my God,
having
the time of my life with all of you people. And it was
that's so cool. They did that for the cover, and I love that.
It was really such a fun campaign to do, and I met some great people doing it. But it was also a really good reminder, you know, I just don't wear heels.
Yeah, they're not meant for everyone. Are not those people.
Is there someone who has you admire who we always like to pay it forward? Who's mm-hmm. We call it the the little Hall of Fame. Is there someone that you'd nominate to that? Like, you think people should know about?
About to break a leg and kill it.
That'd be great.
Great question. Oh my God, I want to go through my Instagram account right now and look. I'm obsessed with this girl here in New York. Her blog is called Brewing Happiness. And I think she's just doing such an incredible job with her brand. And she works with other brands, for sponsored content, in a really beautiful way. We actually spoke on an IACP panel together this year. I think she's killing it. And I think she's about to, explode.
For people who want to work with brands. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the goal, right? Because that's where you make the money.
It's where you make the most money.
Yeah. How did you do that?
Well, I made a lot of mistakes at the beginning. I worked with brands that I shouldn't have worked with. I worked with a pre-made French fry company, and like, I would never buy pre-made French fries. And I did it for $250, and I'm like, this is great. I can spend. I got groceries. This was like 7 years ago, and my readers were like, all seven of them at the time were like, no, and it made me feel so awful. So I quickly was like, never doing that again. And I've gotten some huge campaigns from people that I have to turn down because they're not, quote unquote, on brand for What's Gotta Be Cooking. But I think the best way to start working with brands is to just use some products organically, engage with them on social media, like go to different events where you can network with these people, put together a one pager on your stats and what you can offer a brand and send it to them.
Do you do it all yourself?
I don't now. Now I have a management company, DBA, who I love very dearly. But at first, yeah, I was doing it all on my own, and I was just negotiating everything. I learned how to read a contract.
Did your business degree help you at all in this regard?
Yeah, it did, because I think a lot of people these days actually, especially if you have a manager, you depend on your manager to have all the phone calls for you, and they just relay information to you, and then you go do the creative. I probably, much to my manager's disapproval, I want to be on every phone call, because I think that's when the best results are going to happen from a brand, is when I understand their messaging and their mission and they understand what I can offer them. And we really talk it out beforehand. I don't want to work. I don't care how much money you're paying me. If I can't deliver what you want, I don't want to work with you.
And what about how big a control freak you are?
Such a control freak. It's a problem.
Is it a problem? Like, is there an example of when it's become a problem, or do you actually think it's a secret to your success?
Both. I think it's definitely the secret to my success, because I keep my hands on everything, and I get to make sure it's perfect, even though I think perfect's overrated in terms of like my brand. Like, I don't want anything to be too perfect, but I want in a business setting, I want it to be perfect. But I also know that I need to learn how to delegate, and I haven't been able to do that yet. Like, I don't have an assistant or anything like that. And I'm having a hard time being able to relinquish that control, because I can just do it. Like, I can find my own hotels and I can tell you what flights I want to take. And gives me anxiety.
It's not right, but people would say to you, it's not scalable. Like, you can't be Gabby right. times 20 Correct. If you don't have someone booking your hotels.
Right. I have a lot of help, like Matt and Adam do all my photography. I have someone who helps me with social media, but like, I'm just very efficient about my time, and mm-hmm. I'm okay right now. Well, I know it's not scalable. Like, 17 people have told me on my book tour I need to like figure it out, but I can't do it yet.
And what's that about?
What do you mean?
Like, you just think you can do it more efficiently and better?
Like, I just think I can do it all.
Uh-huh. And you think you can?
I do.
You do?
Yeah. It's a problem. I know. I know it's a problem. Well, maybe I haven't found the right person yet. Like, you have to really find someone that you trust and, like, that can do it almost as good as I think I can do it. And I just haven't found them.
Have you looked?
Not really. Uh-huh. I'm hoping they just like magically appear in front of my eyes one day.
if you're listening to the podcast,
yeah, they don't have to live in LA. They can live anywhere. I think. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
Well, that that happy I can do it all, which is, I think, really what brought you to where you are, right? That you could do it all. You had the vision. You had a strong point of view deep within you that you found, mm-hmm. That you had some help finding, and actually you've had fantastic help along the way. I mean, Lori Buckle was fantastic help.
I would not be where I am without everyone that's helped me.
And Matt and Adam,
yep.
Fantastic help along the way, and like a perfect compliment and a husband. Like, that's, so it's not that you understand your own bar for what good help looks like.
Right.
And it's not overwhelming yet. And so if you got overwhelmed, I'm sure you'd find that, because when you got overwhelmed and you needed someone to shoot your stuff,
yeah.
You found people to shoot your stuff.
For sure.
So you're just not quite there yet.
Right.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
Because
I also have a dad who's obsessive about planning all of our travel. And so it's very easy for me to do it. Like, I can, this book tour I've been on, I've like probably been in 30 cities in the last 3 months. It took me an hour to do all my flights. That's nothing.
Yeah, I could never do that. You did tease one thing that I guess is going to be the last moment of the show. What is it about your father and the clues?
Oh, surprise vacation?
Yeah, because you had said, oh, well, we could talk about that.
Oh, so I'll give you an example. This was like 10 years ago. So imagine me 10 years not as smart. We were going to the Bahamas, and this is my favorite clue he's ever done, but the clue was noisy sheep, tasty pig, ah.
Okay, New Zealand.
Noisy sheep goes bah, oh, a tasty pig is a ham.
Yeah.
Ah, Bahamas. We get 10 clues, but cute. That was one of them, and my sister figured it out. I was so pissed I didn't figure it out, but it's my favorite clue to date. But it's all on my blog if you want to read the past, like, 6 years worth of clues there. He is, I swear, while he's, like, operating on people, he thinks of the most bizarre things and has a nurse write them down, and then they become surprise vacation clues. It's, I don't know how his mind works. It's bizarre.
What type of surgery?
A prostate surgeon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's just...
Grab your groin and go.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it, folks. Thank you so much for listening. Gabi, where can people find you?
I'm on whatsgabicooking.com and all social media.
And you've got to check out her book if you want to cook delicious, simple food that's got a ton of flavor and looks really, really pretty.
Thank you.
And you guys know where to find me, FW Scout, on Twitter and Instagram. And a couple of you have sent in suggestions of guests, which I love receiving, so keep them coming. And any other comments about the show, love to have them. And as I said, if you like what you hear, subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, or Heritage. And we'll catch you next week. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.